Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Okay, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us for another AfterBuzz TV After Show for Downton Abbey Series 6, Episode 5. I'm John Comerford, joined in the studio by Tamara Berg.
Hi everybody.
And of course, Courtney Stewart.
What's up?
Okay, there's so much to cover, but the first thing we have to talk is the special effects.
I call it
the dinner spewing. It was shocking. They lulled me into this amazing, because how many times have we been in this
scenario,
this dining room?
Yes.
Where the worst thing or the most shocking thing that happened was Lord Merton's sons calling out Isabel.
Well, yeah.
And then this, I mean, we knew Lord Grantham was going to have something. We talked about how it's probably an ulcer or something like that. But to have it rupture at dinner.
Oh,
and that was just
good gracious.
So shocking. The look on everybody's faces,
so
the blood
violent.
Splatter on everybody's face. I thought CSI was going to have to go in there. They were going to need Luminol to figure it, to catch all the spots and a bunch of, there's not enough seltzer in Britain to try to get this out.
No.
I mean, it's just, I was still shocked. I'm still thinking about it. How many times did I go back and go, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I was looking at it also afterwards, after I got over the shock, I would rewind it because I'm going, that's amazing special effects. And what a great job the acting on it. I mean, my God, it was like John Hurt in Alien.
Twice. Exactly. I thought he was about to give birth to an alien.
Yeah.
Like, that was extensive and violent and aggressive. And oh, goodness.
And each
table.
Time I saw it, I was like, I know it was happening. And I was like, God, that's good. I mean, that was so impressive.
Impressive, definitely.
Tamara, yes, your words. Find your words.
I almost did a spit take right now, just for the effect. But
wow.
But
yeah.
But there are electronics in front of me,
oh,
so I chose not
God.
To. I can't. You've gone on for like 20 seconds. And I can't even remember
you're
what I was
just
say.
Not expecting it.
No,
you're
no,
just
no.
not expecting anything like that to happen on Downton, and it was just so. I can't. The word. I don't know whether the word. The shocking of it.
Okay, so
shocking.
In our version that we saw, we did not get this, but apparently in the UK there was that. You know the following.
Oh, they had the disclaimer.
Yeah, a disclaimer.
Oh wow.
Yeah, they had the disclaimer at the beginning. We did not have that.
Yeah.
Courtney and I both. Accidentally checked our Twitter feeds just
because you guys see it at
9 o'clock at night or whatever,
yeah.
And
no,
it happens to us at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and so
yeah.
And we can't watch it right then.
Yeah.
So, thankfully, I didn't see all of them,
yeah.
And someone had said that it was shocking. So I knew something was shocking was coming, right?
Yes, that cat.
The cat.
You can
what
see
is
that?
A cat?
That's what somebody posted on Twitter. How people down
there
having fans feel right now.
Oh.
And I was like,
yeah.
Oh my goodness, what happened?
What I heard was there was a collective gasp.
And
knowing that, I still was like,
it still was shocking.
That hurt my throat.
There was a collective shock. You could feel it.
Because it wasn't just like one.
No.
It was like three convulsions,
God.
A collapse
and
on the floor, and spewing everywhere.
Yeah. Nothing polite or British about that.
No.
But the reaction shots they got were just incredible.
No, you're right.
Yes. Neville and getting spewed. You can see it on his bib.
And Mary, kind of cowering over in the corner,
and
like
the dowager.
Horrified.
I mean, it was just so. And just great coverage. Great. It's so exciting and dramatic. And the reaction shots from everybody, the looks between the two sisters,
yes.
Like, oh my God,
their
pillar, their rock, their
foundation,
family. Their patriarch is just, fallen. I mean,
like collapsed.
Yeah, literally.
Literally collapsed.
Yeah, and okay. So,
right, so, okay, a couple things. Again, because you don't see Twitter, I want to make sure that you, and because you're like part a lot of our audience, right?
Yes.
Downton Zombie, not Downton Abbey, was a couple of the hashtags.
Mind you, I had just watched The Walking Dead, see that was like, whoa, did they use the same people? Wow. Like, it was insane.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite, one of our favorite Twitter followers is her name is Jen something, and I can't remember. I don't remember.
Jen Frank.
Yeah. Yes. Biscuits. She goes, holy cats. And that was pretty much how I felt, too. I was going to read this in the news, but since we're talking about it now, Michael Fox, who plays Andy, was interviewed, and he talked about that scene. He said it was pretty graphic. Someone spilt the Kool-Aid. And he added that filming it was pretty graphic. Hugh was so good at it, Hugh Bonneville, because we only had one take.
Well, yeah,
because they could reset the tables and the stuff in his shirt, and the distance it traveled was slightly further than Elizabeth McGovern, Cora, was expecting, and we had to keep going.
Yeah.
And also...
I want to go back to it, because I did mention it. I thought the acting on it's not easy to make that look good. I mean, granted, you have the shock factor and the awe factor of it happening, but the whole thing of it, the when he's standing up at the table, how he spewed the whole thing.
Honest.
And then when he was on the floor.
And he's saying goodbye.
Oh my God.
And she's like, no, and like patting his mouth
saying,
with her handkerchief.
This will not be it. I will not let it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I won't let this be it. Yeah.
That was just great TV, I have to say. Great TV. Don't you think?
I was sickened by it.
I was sickened by it. I want to go into, because I want to get into everything that happened, but just before the dinner and after.
One more thing. This is from Kathy Ressler, and she said, Tamara and Courtney, when the blood was flying around the dinner table, were you thinking, oh no, save the dresses?
I was actually thinking, oh my God, that's so gross. It's going to be all over her dress.
Yes.
That's so gross.
So the lead up.
We have a little bit of shallow, in that sometimes.
All right. So I don't even know if we want to start. I'll just go into it. Let's do this. How we came to this dinner, because obviously Neville Chamberlain is there. I mean, and one can argue that... Dowager losing the support of Dr. Clarkson. She's sending for reinforcements. She calls in none other than the Minister of Health, who happens to be Neville Chamberlain.
Goodness.
Which also lends a lot of credence to the whole hospital storyline anyway, because there's some gravitas there, because obviously Neville goes on to become Prime Minister, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought, here she is blackmailing him to get there.
Totally. Very politely.
Oh, absolutely.
Blackmailing him.
Yeah, blackmailing, was the term I use. I'm sure she would not think of it that. She was just reminding him of what she knew about his past and the fact that his brother-in-law and the digging of the trench.
Piccadilly trench.
Exactly.
Yeah, she's very persuasive.
Oh, yes, extremely persuasive, right. So that's how he gets there. And then I love that the dowager, just before the dinner, she's rearranging the seats and stuff.
She's on a mission.
Oh, man. And she doesn't fight. She says she fights dirt. She fights to win, all that kind of stuff. And
that's
I just
she was
thought
raised.
That,
was
exactly. Mm-hmm. The school of, what was it, hard school, she called
hard,
it?
Or, I went to the hard school.
Well, again,
and,
I don't, didn't like
I
that
fight
part.
Hard
down.
Or something,
yeah,
she said,
Yeah. All that was great stuff moving into it. And even the moment, I thought this was terrific, too. So when he finally arrives and there's already, Cora welcomes him and all that. And then, of course, as soon as Violet gets there, she pulls him away. There's a nice little fulcrum of, remember Jose? And all that other stuff. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, all the machinations.
Exactly.
Yes.
And Isabel walking up. Oh, and she's like, oh, you met my cousin.
My giant roll of the eyes cousin.
Yeah, exactly. So there's all that. And Tom saves him.
And the
nice little moment with Tom saying, look, I thought you needed rescuing. Yeah. And what was his line about how... I know it's bad enough that we have to deal with our own scrapes rather than being dragged into somebody else's. And then Neville saying, you know me too well, and stuff like that. Nice little nod to World
War
II and been dragged into that. I mean, I couldn't believe how much happened in this episode. We're never going to be able to cover it all. Exactly. I haven't written that many notes in a couple of seasons of this, right?
Because we didn't have 25 scenes about who's on what side about the hospital.
Exactly. So full, and Julian just went... all out on this crazy time, Uncle
Julian.
Hey, man,
Julian. There are three episodes before the Christmas episode. That's it. We got to start going somewhere.
Oh, my God. Get somewhere.
Okay, so I think because Tom had that moment with him prior to the dinner.
With Chamberlain.
Yeah. Then at the end, when everybody's leaving, that was also a great moment. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, aren't you going to go with them? No, let them stay. And then he says, call my office. Sure, if you do me one favor. He asks, why did you choose to come here?
And
that's how we get the story. And I'm going, that's great stuff. It's just fun stuff, right? And it was kind of a little strange. I was like, why is he telling the former chauffeur? Not that he knows that, but so he was so...
Free with that info,
but I think it was only because Tom saved him in the beginning of the thing, and then of course, all the shocking thing and everything that happened afterwards. Because otherwise, I don't think Neville would have shared that. But it was a great way to get the story out.
It's cool that Tom feels good to even say these things, and now he feels comfortable. He can ask questions and sort of be that person.
And ever since Tom has come back, I thought, God, he's done a Uncle Julian has done a really good job of bringing him in and really making him so much a part of this and even really pushing a lot of the energy on this. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great.
I appreciate it.
Especially in this episode.
Well, and if we remember how tentative Tom was, in the early years. Yeah. And so he got more comfortable.
Tentative or combative. He was, right.
But, absolutely.
And going to America has really tempered some of that and really given him some maturity.
Because that's why he left, partially.
Exactly.
Like, he never felt perfectly comfortable. So it's cool to see that he's found his place.
It's very cool to see it.
Yes.
And we'll get to back to how he's dealt with Mary in a second, but we want to finish with how this huge event has affected everybody because so pivotal in the scene, in this particular episode, because, as it's happening, Dr. Caution, put him on his side, Isabel, napkins, all that's happening, ambulance, and it's just crazy, and the somewhat panic downstairs, but still trying to control themselves. And then when they, afterwards, okay, so the ambulance finally shows up, Minister of Health, Neville, comes in and tells Cora, look, I don't think I can be of much more help here. And then they have the little talk about the hospital. Look, it's going to happen.
Right?
Just make it's going to be good for everybody. And then their little exchange between Cora and Violet.
With
about
Mary
being
over
honest
in the
and that's not one of her secrets. Is this about Marigold? And then
Mary's in the corner.
Yeah,
it's like
bam,
what?
Bam,
how
bam,
do I
bam.
Not know this?
And, what secret about Marigold?
Exactly,
what is
exactly. And the look on her face was, Mary's face was, priceless because there was so much there. I was like, wait a minute, what about not only about, I don't know this about Miracles, but Mary don't know this about Miracles.
Exactly.
How could that possibly
be? Queen of the Manor, it's not possible.
How could something be happening that I don't know about and I'm not part of?
Yes.
I mean, there was
right.
all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then to follow that up with the moment in the hallway between the two sisters where Edith is the one that's saying, look, we'll take turns.
Yeah.
So mom doesn't have to do it all by herself and everything. And Mary says, I'll go first. it's kind of like, fine, I'll go first. Mm. And then Edith says, I'll check the kids. Of course you will. And I'm it's still kind of a dig in a sense, but a slightly different take on it now because I think she's starting to realize something because obviously she asks Anna.
Yeah.
Right. But in that scene before, I'm going to go see the kids and she says, they have the conversation about how your life can change in one second. And Mary essentially says, your whole perspective, everything that, essentially she says, everything that you knew from here is now this much different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she didn't. To me, it felt like she took that in a completely different way than a Mary in the past would.
Yeah, I would agree.
She seemed kind of like a little stricken by it, and of course, part of it was her dad lying in incredible puddles of blood on the floor had something to do with it as well. But it didn't seem so much as like I've got this information, conniving. I'm going to do something with it. I'm going to
use it against you. No, I didn't. But I still thought, which was great. It was just a vestige of who she was because, of course, you are. But it's a slightly different take on how she would normally say it. So I think there was a nice little movement on that arc.
I agree with that. But I feel like there was maybe some humanity in her.
That's sort of what I'm saying. Seeing your father
pull some blood.
That might have something to do with it.
And also the
little interchange with Tom there as well, saying, look, we're going to have to, it's not so much that we're just going to have to help him. No, we're going
to
have to take over because he can't, just don't want to put him in that position anymore because he just can't right now. Yeah. And of course, Tom saying that.
Lady Mary, Queen of the Manor.
And then she gets that shot of her
at the top of the stairs.
It's a nice callback to earlier in the episode when she says, they're walking in the hillside, and you see Downton in the background, and she says, do you think Papa will really be ready for this, moving the repair shop or whatever it is? He goes, you got to be gentle with him. And then, boom,
this happens. Just,
yeah, exactly. So that was a nice carryover from that. So
I just want to make sure that line got stepped on a little bit. So long live our
Queen Mary. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Kind of a little bit of a dig from Tom, but also compliment, you know?
Well, I didn't see that. Yeah, I didn't see it as a dig, but but it's a brotherly one.
Or maybe a joke.
Yeah, because, you know, when the king dies, somebody has to take over. He's not dead yet, of course, we saw the coming up.
I'm not dead yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Not yet.
But just so. Oh, and then we also had the nice moment again between Isabel going to
and Violet.
We got them. It's like, you know, it's like they can be enemies or be on opposite sides all they want, but when they need each other, when they really need each other, they come back to
them. And that was something that we've loved so much the entire series as that was, you know, coming together. So I was really happy to see that. It only took a second.
Yeah, and it was coming off instantly. Your enthusiasm has got the better of your manners. Yes.
Right.
And then boom, right?
That, right.
Yeah.
I'm there for you. I'll hold you down.
Yeah, we'll go together. You've been in for a shock.
Yes. And again, it's almost like when we think back years ago now when the Dowager had to deal with the death of Sybil. And I think it was that one moment we have of her. She doesn't say a word. She just talks to somebody and how she's saying that we have to deal with so much. And it's just, she just looks like everything.
John, I'm in a delicate situation.
You brought that up, and then she kind of called back to that when she said, "There's so many shocks, I've had so many, a lot of shocks or something."
Yes. And I'm just going, the amount that she's had to endure, just the poor woman.
Oh man,
that it was the moment where she leaned on her cane.
She couldn't hold herself up.
Or a piece of furniture.
Yeah,
or something.
She leaned on the post. Yeah, it was just so I just felt it again. It was like, oh my god, she's just so good in those moments.
Oh,
incredible.
Oh. Okay, just one question I have for you guys. So we obviously see Robert in bed the next time.
And somewhat feisty.
Because people are going, you're like, oh, do you think... Some people who maybe didn't see the coming up were saying, you know, oh, do you think he's going to die? To which other people were responding, duh, he's in the coming up.
Yeah. Which doesn't mean he won't die.
No, that's my point. Eventually. That's my point is, what do we think his odds are? What kind of odds are we placing on him surviving?
He had a gastrectomy.
Right? A what?
No,
none of our business. Yes.
But so, I can't hold it up forever.
Yeah, I don't. You know,
I mean, because it very well could be a red herring. You know, he's sitting up there in bed doing just fine.
Sure, he could. He could do. I mean,
then he'll take a turn over the.
I think either way you write it, you can either be extremely dramatic to have him stay on and feel his loss of power and masculinity because he can't do what he did, which is indicative of an Edwardian period anyway, because that's all going by the wayside. Now we have the physical manifestation in one man, everything being pulled away from him because it's no longer can exist. So, I mean, that could be a great way to do it. Or it could be just dramatic to just think he's going
to
get better or whatever, and all of a sudden he doesn't. So, I mean, I'm excited either way in terms of just the viewing because it could be dramatic either way.
All I know is he better stay alive long enough for Edith to get married if this whole wedding thing happens.
And
if
it's
that would be the thing that would keep him alive so he could walk her down the aisle.
He better stay alive
for good.
For
good. Okay, now the other thing about this whole shocking thing, just for a second, let's talk Carson because.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, kind of mirroring
exactly
the Dowager's.
Mm-hmm, when he's outside after Neville has finally left and he's standing there and you could see the same gutting when the wind is taken out of him.
Shaken to his core.
Yeah, and all that. Oh, my God. It was
he had something.
And
he had a good comment.
Shutting the door.
Life is short. Death is certain. Or
death
sure,
is,
yeah.
Life is short. Death is short.
Death is short.
Yeah.
Oh, that was... God.
And it all sucks. No, that wasn't it. Life is short. Death is short. Death is sure. That is all we know.
That is all we know.
Yeah. Darkness. Oh man, it was exhausting. It still is exhausting. All right, but we have so much else to cover. My God, it's like he packed everything in this particular episode.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about Mary, Tom, and Henry and the whole thing. Because, you know, there's all this talk about Henry coming to test drive in the car, and Tom offers to escort her, and everything. You know, Mary's trying to play it off like,
sure.
Like the same way Edith is playing, it's not a date.
It's not a date. Mary's like, of course not.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I said, that's why I loved when she said, of course you are, because it was a callback to me for his, of course not. You know, but in a different way. So I liked that he used similar lines for that. So, but Mary, you know, she's begrudgingly
Yes.
Right.
Quote, end quote. Going to see this test drive because, but even before that, they have the conversation as they're walking through the hillside, talking, presumably talking about where to put the repair shop.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that great shot of Downton. They keep finding good ways to show Downton. I just love it. Oh my God.
We have a few more.
Yeah, exactly. I've never seen that one way off in the hillside.
No, it was really majestic and beautiful to be able to see everything. And they went kind of like, oh, it's going to be over there. Not over there. Over there.
Yeah, and then you really get some context, too, because later on they talk about we'll have to take over the estate. And you realize, oh, that's right. The village is way over. It's the estate, and it's huge.
It's a 20-minute walk.
Yeah, all that craziness, 20-minute walk, right?
Yeah.
All right, but they're talking there, and they're talking about, you know, do you like the guy? And, you know, and she says, I don't want, I'm the youngish woman. That whole talk about being a youngish woman.
Youngish.
Thank God that, you know, it's true, though, right? So she's not.
We know, yeah.
And then she doesn't want to be a snob or come off snobbish, but you know, she doesn't want to weigh down.
Beneath me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all that talk. And then they had this great talk
about Sybil again.
But it was also not just about Sybil. It was really about Tom in that sense that the two of them being equal and the new forward thinking about what relationships can be, post-Edwardian, I guess, in some fashion. That's, you know, and...
But it's about people, not necessarily about what they come from.
Well, and understanding the perspective of where people are coming from, because he was saying, you know, I really don't think it has anything to do with money. If you'll remember, people thought Sybil had everything and I had nothing,
right.
and we were actually equally matched, and we both believed that.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe it will open up Mary's eyes. I don't know.
I think I'm developing gold.
That's all right.
And you're right under an air conditioner right now.
But that's okay. We will forgive you. But I thought it was a terrific scene. Again, they keep coming up with this. See, okay, as opposed to other scenes where we've been critical of, where we have similar things happening, they keep forwarding that relationship, keep strengthening, deepening that relationship, broadening that friendship, all that kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, the hospital talk, which we've been annoyed by it to some degree, hasn't been the same thing.
The only ones, by
the way. Oh, is that right? Okay,
yeah.
Well.
Twitterverse is definitely
better. Oh, is that right? Yeah. Okay, well, good to know. But anyway, I like how they keep doing that, and you know, because it really keeps deepening that. And I'm just a fan of how he's writing that. Mm-hmm. I think Uncle Julian's done a fabulous job on that.
Also, maybe connection.
Maybe setting up a sequel.
Maybe.
That's
I don't know.
What happens to Tom and Mary.
It's not just us hoping for that.
But obviously, so he escorts her to the test track, and like we had postulated, that she was not happy about the risk taking. You know,
no.
So,
too fast.
Okay, yeah. I have to say, I felt that the music that they played when they were doing the racing, it felt very James Bond to me. And it didn't really fit. I mean, I know they were trying to increase the excitement level, but it felt a little out of place to me. Yeah, it felt a little out of place. You know, drone shots, okay, sure, but then, you know, to put the James Bond music behind, I just didn't like it as much. Yeah, but one of the things I loved about this scene and kind of how things unfolded for him the entire time was the way Tom was standing there, you know, kind of arms folded, grin on his face, going, "You people think you're fooling each other? Yeah. Don't be ridiculous."
Yeah. Oh, especially in the pub you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, he even did it. He was the one who said, "Let's go to the pub. We have to celebrate. Come on,
exactly.
Let's all go do something."
Yeah,
together.
She said, "You don't have to marry him." But you do have to let him have this one and all that other stuff. But in the pub, it was great because, all right, and again, this to me is again another stripping of the Edwardian thing about propriety and all this stuff. And he's just going, you know,
having a drink.
You want to spend more time together, just say it, right? And Mary's response was great too. Yeah, he's assimilated somewhat, but he still likes to fight the
environment.
And, you know, it was very coy about the whole thing. Henry and inviting her out to dine with him with Evelyn Napier. It's like, why would you want them to dine together? That's such an odd thing. Rub it in Napier's face that he's still pining and that you're taking, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, I'd love to, she said. And that's probably part of the reason why she'd love it.
Oh, sure, why not?
But why can't you say, I'd like to spend some more time with you. And just go. Instead of all of the machinations.
Yeah.
Funny. Oh, and, you know, Mary snobbish. Actually, I don't think I've ever been in a pub.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And Dad only went once
a
year.
Dad
goes
once a year just to
socialize with
a pint.
The common folk, basically.
She's really slumming it. So.
It just made me laugh.
Here's what I'm not sure of, and I'm sure the our listeners can help me.
Yeah.
I don't, maybe you guys can.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure where Henry Talbot fits in the whole pecking order of, you know, is he on par with her? I don't imagine he is, but he comes from a decent family and everything. I just don't know. Because is she saying all that about marrying Dan because it's not a possibility for her to be with Henry, or what's the deal?
I think, yes, I think that's part of it. I honestly can't remember his lineage.
Because I figured he's not on the same level. Yeah, I get that part. But how many steps
down
is he?
And is he just like the brother of the heir, and that's why he isn't?
Right. Is it? Yeah. And what's the deal? And how inappropriate would it be for her and stuff? So
well, but, and then there's
does anybody know?
There's the whole other, you know, conversation about maybe it just doesn't matter that much anymore.
Yeah, but apparently it does to her still. It's still in her. Obviously, it's in the front of her mind because, you know, regardless of what her heart is or what, how attractive he may be, as she says, she's not going to marry down. So it's in the front of her mind.
Yeah.
So she's not willing to forgive that convention.
Hmm. Yeah,
I just don't know how many steps they're differentiated by.
Yeah.
So anyway, now let's go to the other sister, Edith. Looking this time, by the way, I have to say because of you two,
you finally noticed.
I was paying attention to everything
that,
she wore.
That navy blue coat with that hat, walking
episode,
in the park.
And the little green flower that matched it. Yeah.
Everything. Hey, that is a nice outfit. Yeah. Every time I saw her, even at the breakfast or the whatever it is that when she was, you know, I'm going, well, they are putting in her nice outfits.
She looks so modern and professional.
She
and
does.
Just, so cute. I love it.
Yeah, she did really look good, and I loved how coy she was being herself about. It's not
he's
a date.
Except
friend.
She's practically blushing and giggling when she's reading the note from him.
Oh, yeah. That part was great. I mean, all of it was great. Nothing. And, you know, poor Edith, I'm going, how are they going to mess this up? And I go, of course, she has her first kiss with Bertie. And then that Friday, her dad, you know, pops up flood.
Explodes.
Oh, my God. So, in a sense, poor Edith again. But prior to that, it was great to see her. It was great to see them walk in the park and talk about his cousin and how, you know, how much he appreciates his cousin. And then there's this talk about Tangiers and he only picks. And I'm going, what the hell is he talking about there? What is that about? But, you know, we got just a little bit of that. But more than anything, I just loved, come back to my place for a drink. And
I was shocked. I was like, alone? What?
Are we going to be a chaperone there?
We're going to have a drink, and then we'll go to dinner afterwards?
Mm-hmm. Who knows what could happen?
I know.
But
she is 33, as we learned, because she was born in 92.
Yes.
Am
I getting that right?
Whatever. Are we 25?
Yeah, I think we're still 25. So whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's 32, 33, whatever it is.
33.
So anyway, and then they have the drink, and, you know, it's just, they're talking about
cocktail.
And her outfit.
And
the thing
dress,
her,
the gold and the red and the headband.
When he put that fur coat on her, I was like, oh, Edith has arrived.
Fancy.
So fancy.
And she was saying things like she doesn't want to, Downton, do you want to leave Downton? And she says, I just want a life outside of Downton. I can't waddle in.
Wants to get out of Downton.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
But
just that she can't waddle in Mary's wake because she knows that Mary will eventually have it all.
She said it is Mary's.
Yeah.
Exactly. And she's building this wonderful thing herself.
Yes.
You know, so interviewing the
new editor.
Yes.
The woman who was
born
in the same year.
The very last shot of Edith, poor Edith, in the office as she's having the interview, she's like, and looks like the next thing she's going to say is, you've got the job. You know? I mean, she just looks so, you know, happy.
Right, and she looks so relieved that she found somebody that was capable, that was, you know, she could work with and talk to and relate to because it obviously was a woman, same age, not this old stuffy dude. Exactly. So I was like, well, nice.
I also really appreciated how there was a bit of pride. Which is a bit uncharacteristic for Edith.
Right.
When she was talking about how one horrific night we had to put that issue together. But she wasn't like, and I'm not going to show it to you. It's like, here, take a look.
It.
Tell me what you think.
And not only but really, she says to show you that it can be done by somebody our age. Not because I want to show you what I did.
I'm so awesome.
Because it was we anyway. I mean, it was terrific to see. I mean,
yeah.
She was.
Loved it.
She's not her sister.
They kind of, you know. Springboarded off each other with the pitch about the women in Victorian and coming of age and all that other stuff. And I'm like, oh, this looks good. This is the new Ms. for Britain.
Yeah.
It's like, what, you know.
In 1925.
But no, it's just a good possibility. It's great to see that she now has possibility. We can see what Edith can be.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
loved it.
Especially
every minute.
The wake. So, very happy to see Bertie and then her together because I think they make a great couple.
And then they kissed.
Well, what do we think?
And he was like, ooh, I didn't know if you were going to let me. And she was like, of course I was. I loved it. It was so sweet.
In so Courtney speak.
That was in Courtney speak. That was my translation of it. Because if it makes you like giggly yourself and you're watching the show, I'm like, oh, yes. So sweet. It was really good. And then he nicely placed that fur on her shoulders and talked about the restaurant that he picked because he knew she was like, I love that place, and he's like, I knew you would because we have so many things in common or whatever. And
we love the same things. I was like, oh my god, he said the L word. Not that he said it to her.
I know,
but like,
no, but it was there.
He's taking
in Pinochle. He opened Trump is what he did right there. I know that's a weird reference.
10% of people are going to understand. No, I'm sorry, that's far too gracious. 2% of people are going to understand that
he
reference.
He did, though, but he did.
Wow. Okay.
He did.
Well, all right. So you're happy with Birdie. We like this coupling. You thought
he put
good.
A stamp on it.
Yeah. And I got a couple of emails and tweets this week about that, you know, the dubious program being left places.
Right.
And someone else even said there was a script someplace. And someone else sent me the original article. And it all looks like crap at this point.
Oh, is that right?
And I read it and I was like, that just looks too convenient. Mm-hmm. But I don't care about that news story. I still think it looks like we're going that way.
I hope we do. I mean, it'd be fun. I think that would be a terrific way, especially if the Christmas special included it. I mean, my God,
exactly.
It would be
amazing. We have Anna having a baby and everybody surviving.
Nobody dying.
Nobody dying. Snow. Okay. It's going to be beautiful.
It's going to be beautiful.
We got to move on because there's still...
We've talked about three topics. Okay, go, John. What's next?
We're going to talk about Daisy and Mr. Mason. First of all,
okay.
This episode, when it opens up with Mr. Mason, you know, driving in his wagon with all this stuff. And again... Great. Now, we've seen those shots of Downton, but to have him look at Downton and the reverse angles of everything and the carriage going by, whatever we want to call it, wagon, whatever it was.
Sweet.
Just terrific. Precious. I mean, you know, right there, I'm going, oh, that's right, he's moving to Yewtree. And then we have the whole thing about him moving to Yewtree and Andy offering to help.
No, he's not offering to help. He's very interested in helping.
I think Miss Patmore is trying to get a husband.
They have
some double dating unpacking going on.
And again, a lot of it just done with looks and reaction chats. Yes. I'm going, ooh, well, let's see. We're being subtle here.
Let's put a basket together. Give him some biscuits.
You know, there was.
And wait a minute. And in Courtney speak, what does that mean?
She's trying to get something. And that's okay, because we want her to get whatever she needs. But
get some biscuits.
Get some biscuits. Yeah.
Patmore's trying to get some biscuits with some biscuits.
She wants to share her biscuits.
There you go. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So, her biscuits.
You know, there were looks last week between Andy and Daisy, and we did not get a chance to talk about that. You know, someone mentioned it in our YouTube comments.
So, do you think they were, because he was interested in her, or was he interested in the fact that she knows Mason because he really is interested? What do you think? Both?
I think it's both. Initially, I thought it was just, I want to try and pursue Daisy a little bit.
I thought that as well.
But then, you know, when he did that very noble moment, Mary and Tom are standing there, they're talking about the pigs and saying, Mr. Mason, can you handle it? And he just jumped
in. The silence.
Everybody was like, of course he can't help. Yeah.
Pregnant pause. And it's deer in headlights.
But I mean, wasn't that, that's one of the things I love about these English dramas. Mm-hmm. And because we've seen it with the Dowager, we've seen it with Cora, we've seen it with Mary, that boy, they just like slide in and pick up the dropped, scenario.
Yeah.
So Andy's standing there ready to go, like, as a matter of fact, I was going to be doing that with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Discussion beforehand. He's just ready to pick it up and go.
And, you know, prior to knowing, I thought, wow, what a noble gesture and all this. That's the way to go and stuff like that. And I still think it was because, he didn't have to say anything. But not only was he, I thought it was noble, he was also seizing an opportunity. But he didn't know if Mason was going to offer it or help him or whatever. He could have just, said thanks, but no thanks.
Shot him down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But again, it was just a great moment. And again, furthering a storyline which I didn't see coming. I was like, way to bring Andy into the fray here.
Andy, he can't read. He wants to be a pig farmer.
Yeah,
and
all that plays into it. He can't read, which is another shocking development.
I
would think that, where he came from, because I didn't expect that either. I mean, he's like, he can't read at all? Really?
Not at all.
Yeah.
And here side note, Farrell. Can you imagine being an adult and not being able to read?
I can't read. So that's why I watch a lot of television.
I mean, has to be terrifying.
Yeah.
and crippling because you know you've got to hide it and it, he said, you know, I'm just too stupid. I can't possibly learn that. And I felt such compassion for him, and it was so upsetting, you know, to see him, because that I can't even imagine how frustrating that is, because it really shuts down your world.
Oh, yes. and the putting on the shenanigans and reading end
his
quote,
magazines.
Yes, the having to do all that, and the frustration that we got to hear off camera.
Yeah,
and of course, who comes to his rescue but Thomas?
And
again,
he just won't let me hate him.
Yeah, we got you back.
You got me back. I literally noted that down from last week. So I was like, I'm done. You can die, and I'm fine with it. And I'm not. Like,
and that
I'm
was
on the roller coaster.
Kathy Wrestler, Courtney, did Thomas bounce back
it
for you
sucks,
this episode?
Because I was like, really,
she was ready to hate him.
I was firm. I was fine. I was
he
good.
Was
I was
resolute.
Done with him. And that little bitty, and that wasn't even that much, but I was like, damn, you just don't want me to hate you. Like,
well,
I
but there
can't.
Was the other moment too. He surprised himself.
Yeah.
Coming back after the gastronomy.
Oh, yes.
Gastronomy.
Gastronomy. That's my world. He said, well, as a matter of fact, I care. And I'm surprised at that, because I didn't think I would care one way or the
other.
Think
he'd mind one way or another.
Must be getting soft in my old age.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then even Mosley making the comment, like, don't let the other animals die, animal. We'll pound, tell you to leave them alone, all that kind of stuff. Just great, great little moments. I mean, and so many. If I'm going, there was just so much in this. I'm saying, you should have spread that out over a couple of episodes.
Yeah,
or have every one of them be like this.
Exactly. Yeah. I guess maybe it comes in spurts.
Yeah.
But
I have to say, this is interesting. I like the turn with Andy. You know, he even says to Thomas, look, I've treated you badly, and I feel bad, and I'm sorry for that.
After he got some clarification.
Right.
From Anna and Bates.
Yeah, he did. But he said he'd learned about Thomas, and he didn't want to give Thomas the wrong impression, which is why he kept nipping everything in the bud, so to speak. That's not a really good euphemism, but let's move on.
But I think Anna's comment of, you know, I think you've got it wrong. I think that flipped him.
Yeah, you think it, yeah.
I do. Mm-hmm. I think it made him go, oh, maybe I do have it wrong. So... Mm-hmm. I think that was key.
Yeah.
I do.
And Beryl didn't dig. When he apologized, he just was, what did he, I can't remember what he said.
He said, I've heard worse.
I've heard worse or something like that. And he just kind of went on. Because he could have been like, yeah, you were crappy to me, but whatever. And he didn't play
I've
on
known
that
worse.
All,
I've
like
known
that.
Worse. I beg, thank you for correcting me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Because I do think that, you know, because originally I asked you guys a couple of episodes ago, it's like, what do you guys think? Do you think this is romantic? And I didn't really sense a romance or any kind of attraction to Andy in any way. I just thought he was trying to be friendly. Or in the beginning, we thought he was just trying to be useful so he didn't get fired, so to speak. Show the youngins what to do around here. So, but then I thought it was just he kept just getting spurned because Andy was... So now we know everything.
Just a little homophobic.
Side note, do we think Lord Hexham is going to have anything to do with Thomas? Is there going to be a connection?
Oh,
there?
Because they were talking about painting only young men in Tangiers.
And that's his new job.
He's like, you know, the confirmed bachelor.
Yeah, that's right. The confirmed bachelor that had a quote arranged marriage at some point with his cousin or whatever the hell it was. I don't know. That's interesting.
There is a little bit of talk about that.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know, just from fans, from
here's the thing.
Uncle Julian.
I think it's an interesting thing to dangle out there. Again, pardon that euphemism.
There really was a spit take right
there.
Yeah,
there really was a spit take. About the whole painting young men in Tangiers and the confirmed bachelor stuff. I'm going, why is he doing all this? So who knows? Who knows? We got to have some place for Barrow to go.
Well, and there, as opposed to the grave, which is where we... Every episode that gets closer to the end. But, I mean, he said that unless it was another red herring, but Robert James Collier said, you know, it is tragedy to the end for
Thomas. I still think it would be tragic because this is great. I'll tell you why. Because he won back Courtney in this particular episode. Who knows if he'll lose you again. He may lose you, which is great. Let's bounce you back and forth because that would be fun.
Yes, because that's what we do.
So let's just say he does it solid and he's really helping, Andy learn and read and write and the whole thing.
Yes.
And then it's really going to endear us and stuff.
Yes, and then he dies.
We'll be enamored of him.
And
yes, exactly. Because he's still...
So he'll die anyway, and then we'll feel even worse.
Well, not only that, but again, how dramatic it is that he finally does something that makes a difference in somebody's lives and is noble, is genuine, is sincere, all those things.
Altruistic.
Yes, and he stops focusing on how horrible he's been treated, because he has been.
Yes.
But instead, he just tries to do something right, tries to do something good for somebody else. And it could still be incredibly
terrible
and dramatic that he does die.
I'm getting nervous about these next three episodes.
I'm standing by that prediction.
But don't you think it would be amazing for him to that character to experience that altruism and what it could do for somebody else? Because I don't think he's ever done that.
Right.
I think that would be an incredible thing for him to experience.
Yeah. True friendship. Yes. True kindness.
Yes, without having any...
agenda.
Any agenda about it. Yeah, it might be... That could be a huge turning point for him.
And then he dies.
And then he dies. Yes, I'm going. Yeah, that would be incredibly dramatic. You're right.
Yeah.
But you know, here's the thing. I like the idea of there maybe being a little hope of everybody. Dying.
Somebody's got it.
But you know what? Yeah. Death is sure.
I mean, but look.
Sure.
Well, think about it.
Put that in that episode.
How shocking and amazing was it to have this episode with the possibility that Lord Grantham was going to die? I mean, I mean, it was just so overwhelming. So how could you not write something like that? In the end of your series.
Yeah. Of course. Okay, John, what's
right,
next?
We got a big long list. Well, Hughes and Carson we had to
The honeymoon is over.
Oh, that dinner looked real nasty though.
This knife has spots. My plate is cold, which is a shame.
It was cold.
The chops are rare. These vegetables are just wrong.
Yeah.
But how are you gonna call her out right now?
Mr. Carson, you're not at work, my friend, and maybe you should leave work at work and not at home.
I think that's true, but by the same token, he probably is used to eating that well.
I'm sure he is.
You know, because even though they're the servants, I wouldn't be happy.
I wouldn't either, but I'm not newly married either. I don't know that I would take her to task for that.
Well, shouldn't he have like slipped it in, been like, "Hey, honey, don't you want to just talk to Patmore a little bit more about how?"
Or
to
maybe talk to Patmore privately.
Don't like announce.
Don't call her out in front of everybody.
Called her out in front of everybody. That was awful.
Got about 50% of my Lord Grantham gasp was for Mr. Carson calling out Hughes in front of Pat. Because Grantham was, I already did that one already.
Yeah.
And then this one was like, no, he didn't.
You both said that?
That's exactly, I said it out loud while I was watching him. No, he didn't just do that.
Yeah.
It was not okay.
Because for him who has this.
Class, decorum.
Get a clue. Do you just become clueless?
I go, that's your new wife, and that's how you decide you want to deal with that issue? But again, it is very work-like, because that's what he would do.
That's what
he's
thinking work-like.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, you need to figure out how to separate those two. And Mrs. Hughes, I'm going, first of all, I thought for sure she was going to be reacting a little bit more to it, and I wanted to go, when is she going to, all right, that's it, you know?
Yeah. Well, she doesn't really hold back that much, and she couldn't do it in front of everybody.
Why not? He did it.
Because she doesn't.
Well, I know, but I wanted her to, because I just thought...
He'll get his. He will.
It's coming.
I hope the next meal he makes is even worse and goes, what do you think
now,
buddy?
Some warm porridge with dry raisins?
You want something to eat? There's the kitchen. There's the fridge. Go to it, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, because...
Mr. Mason won't have
those
worries.
But that won't happen, of course, but that'll be fun to see. But I love that already the wedding is... The honeymoon's over. That's it. You bet.
It's done.
All right, now we got to throw them into turmoil again so we can find them way back to having sweet moments by the beach.
Yeah.
So.
There was Phyllis Logan, who plays... See, I did that.
Nice. Mrs. Hughes.
She did an interview, and it was before the marriage happened that the interview came out. And, she said, you know, the interviewer said, well, is there going to be a wedding? And she says, well, I can't tell you if there's a wedding, but I can tell you there will be a mutiny if there's not a wedding.
She talked about
how it was not smooth sailing for the two of them, but she was very cute in her.
It doesn't make good TV if it's all too smooth. But anyway, so that's fun. But I'm just thinking, Carson, you are just not reading the signs.
Clueless.
Yeah, exactly. I go, you have no idea what's coming up inside your head because something's coming upside your head.
Her hands didn't quite make it that time.
You want me to get familiar with the pots and pans? Yeah. Here we go.
Can I have that skillet?
I'm going to have you become familiar with it.
Exactly.
All right. So let's move on to Baxter. Everything else is flying, all pistons are firing, I'm going, wait. She actually uses the term anticlimactic, and I went,
thank you.
Okay.
This whole thing.
The irony of Uncle Julian writing that this is anticlimactic. Yes, it is. It is extremely anticlimactic to build up this whole thing about her testifying and then not and get to see her testify and face her accuser and learn who he is.
Talk about it or
but
something.
But apparently in the UK, there's an ad that's running or something that says that that storyline's not over yet.
Oh, so maybe we'll still get that.
It wasn't in the coming ups that we saw, but apparently it's out there somewhere else. That, that storyline.
But I'm just still, I'm going, okay, well, why would you do that? Why would you go? Because now, again, I'm going back to Anna and Bates and the whole green thing. I'm going,
please
don't set it up. Don't follow through. I keep withholding it so we keep wanting it, then finally.
Yeah.
But to this, I was just going, why did we even bother going to the courtroom? I just was like, really? Okay,
right. Well, there, you know, the parallel between, you know, the Anna story and this one is one that a couple of people have picked up on as well in our YouTube comments. Elizabeth Friesch was saying that she feels like, and I agree with this, I was thinking about it earlier, that it's like Uncle Julian is trying to redeem himself from the Anna story through the Baxter story and not wanting other girls to get hurt, something that changed her life. And then Elizabeth in the notes keeps writing and writing and writing. And at the end, she goes, can you tell I'm never going to stop being bitter about this?
Exactly. But that's the thing. The big thing is that he set up this whole thing with Baxter that, you know, you don't want this to happen to anybody else, which is kind of why we wanted Green to get his comeuppance.
Exactly.
Not just what he did for Anna, but for all the other things.
Yeah.
So if you're setting that up, he still has time to do it, because I'm sure Uncle Julian, well, I'm hoping Uncle Julian will have figured out how to do that one, because we all want that.
With Green, you mean? The Green
story. No, not with Green, with this at least, because please don't do that again.
Yes.
It's just very unsatisfying. It just doesn't resolve itself very well. It's not.
Stupid.
Yeah, and then I was just like, oh my God, if he drops this and that's it. Why did we take the detour? What was the point?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't.
She was way too emotional about it, though, for him to drop it, I think.
Yeah,
like,
well,
I was like,
you'd think that. And I keep
was
saying
so
that.
Dark and hard. Like, ugh.
But then we thought the same thing of the green thing. So I was like, uh oh. Exactly. So, but who knows? We'll see.
Well, and another comment from Nico Dav, 1181. Was that at some point, this is a prediction, that Mosley will declare his love for Baxter and beat the crap out of her awful ex-lover in the courthouse.
Mosley.
Mosley.
That would be kind of amazing.
He really is being her protector.
Oh, he
he's
is.
Making
yeah, he's
sure
great.
She's going there. He's defending her to people who are questioning her.
Right, yes, yeah. He came to her
or challenging
base,
her, even.
She's thought about it a month. Yes.
And that would be a nice moment for him to have a man moment.
Yeah,
exactly.
So
be a real man.
We want to see Mosley put up the dukes.
Yeah, we do.
He's like a former boxer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was one of the dreams.
One of the
that
things he learned, you know, because he's big on education.
Exactly.
Yes, I always wanted to be a fighter. You know what? We'll see how this works out.
So.
All right, but okay. So extremely unsatisfying for me, and very anti. Just the irony of using the word anticlimactic. I'm going.
Yeah.
We all feel that. Let's all be listening to the words we're saying.
And a little bit also with the Anna Bates thing, because we had a couple of moments with them. And the whole. But we did have a nice moment with the Bad Harvest.
Bad Harvest. I love that.
Yeah.
I thought that was adorable.
Yeah.
So the gods won't get jealous.
Yeah.
Because I believe in that myself. I've never heard the Bad Harvest thing, but
no,
I do
I
that.
Never heard
I do
that one either.
Something like that a lot.
Oh.
I do. And also.
So now, as we watch, anytime something good happens in Downton, I'm going to be going Bad Harvest. Yeah.
Okay.
So. But that was nice to see them, and, you know.
It was a really sweet scene, again, because we haven't seen one.
What's that?
Walking and talking.
Walking and talking.
But still foreshadowing death, because she's like, don't get too excited. We still have months.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not going to happen for you, because you're speaking negatively about it now.
See, she's bad harvesting it.
Yeah, she is. Mm-hmm. She's cleared it. Okay.
It's going to be all right.
All right. We got to get our final storyline, of course, which was the comic relief for me for this one, because we needed some.
Really
was the Spratt and Denker.
Because
Denker gets sapped.
Were you drunk?
Yeah. There was so many great stuff. And, you know, what was Denker's line about her passionate? She was. I wrote it down.
Keep talking. I'll find it.
But anyway, when we get to there. So, obviously. She is just beside herself that Dr. Clarkson has pulled his support, or is even considering pulling his support from the Dowager, his sponsor. What was the word she used?
I can't help it if I'm passionate.
Yes.
Any more talk of that, and I won't be able to sleep.
Exactly. And, you know, Spratt, very
dry.
Not only that, but. The word I was written down was that he was. I'm sorry, I'm losing the word at the moment, but he was thinking,
resolute.
No, don't touch this. You know, matter of fact, not matter of fact about something very I can't, it doesn't matter. Pragmatic, that's the word. I wouldn't touch this. And I'm going, why are you even bothering to say anything? Let her dig her own hole. But it was amazing that he was saying all that.
Yeah.
I was surprised by it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things, I think I asked you this, when resolution came around, you know, so the letter came from Clarkson.
Yeah.
He said, you know, she called me a traitor.
Yes.
And all of that. So then the resolution, I had wanted to see that scene between Denker and the Dowager.
Agreed. Right.
Yeah. I was wondering if mine got cut, and it didn't.
Yeah, and then it got cut in ours too. But I wondered why they didn't actually have Denker have the scene with Violet, and I wondered if it was actually just a practical thing. Like,
I think it was. Yeah, I think he already had these great scenes. I think first of all, Maggie Smith was in a bunch of scenes, so you probably had to deal with that, and you only have a limited amount of time. Could have a second crew. You already had the great scenes between Denker and Spratt. Let's keep them here for the day. Let's get this. Because I agree with you, but you're still going to have another moment later with Spratt. I mean, sorry, Denker and Violet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you didn't need it in this one. So because this storyline was pretty much between them.
Mm-hmm. You're right. That's true.
So except for the one scene between Isabel and the Dowager. Where she learns what happened by Clarkson's letter. Her reaction was incensed.
She was incensed.
Oh my God, I've never seen her more upset.
Not even your place to have opinions.
Yes.
Let alone express them.
Yeah. That was good. And then she's more upset that she has to find a
replacement. Because that sucks.
And Isabel just said, yes, of course.
Of course, that's
why.
That is the tragedy.
Oh, my God. It was great. It was so... She had... Her hackles were so...
perched and bouncing on the chair. It was like,
I haven't heard that many... in a scene in a long time.
Exactly.
Right?
When you unleash the dogs of war. What was that?
Yes, you must go where they run.
You must go where they take us.
The other one, which was one of the great lines of by Violet, if I withdrew my friendship from everyone who spoke against me or spoke ill of me, my address book would be empty.
Yes. Oh, my God.
You're fired.
Yes. And, just great. Of course. But Denker, again, much like Barrow in a sense, she's kind of a cockroach as well. She figures out a way to survive, and it all has to do with the naughty nephew.
Naughty nephew.
Who he gave some sort of help to.
Harbored.
Putting him in, harbored a known criminal in the potting shed, as we learned.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Spratt, I was going, really? Because he said, he tucked tail real pretty quickly. I thought he was going to put a bigger fight there. But.
Yeah, he was so, like I was saying earlier, so resolute. And then all of a sudden,
actually. So something big there.
Actually.
But then I'm going, why did you not hold her feet to the fire before you agreed to it and say, all right, but hey,
one time.
Exactly. Or do something because... You know, she's the kind of person that's going to hold this over you forever.
Well, it's not like that. So he didn't even think of
that. You don't
think
he's like that? I'm good. I think he's like that.
He's like that in the, little sense. I'll mess up your, brushes because you're supposed to do this.
Right.
But not like I'm going to, blackmail you to get my way kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with that.
I feel like maybe he had a little bit of protection from the Dowager herself because he said, she's going to give you one more chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think maybe he had insurance there because if Denker screwed up again, he wasn't going to be able to save her. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
So, but do we like that she's lording this over them and going to keep this over him?
Yeah.
Because it is kind of fun to see Spratt squiggle.
It depends on whether or not I need to mention
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll just it see what way.
Looks crazy.
I have to say, I do like Spratt squirming. It's nice. It's kind of, because he has these great looks on his face, you know, just his facial expressions
he's
are
really
amazing
good.
And stuff like that. And he's so. I like it when he gets knocked down a peg because he just thinks he's so much.
Yeah. It's so sour.
It's kind of fun. It's kind
Very
of fun
sour
to put in there.
So
for me, it was such a welcome addition to this particular episode because I needed some levity. I needed some nonsense. And they provided that.
Little did you know how much levity you needed
exactly.
until you got to the end.
But it was just extremely packed. And I want to salute to Uncle Julian for being, because it reminds first of all, how much I love Downton. And so much can be packed into one particular episode.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's a really high bar. It's hard to hit that every week, especially if you're the one doing the writing. And I'm, because he's the only one getting the credit, I'm assuming he might have some help. But He's getting the credit.
I think it's been said that he's he writes every episode. But
so that right there is amazing.
He's got 3+1 left. He better be all this good. That's all I'm saying.
But did it do that for you this episode?
It
did you just
for
go
me in every
wow?
Way.
Yeah,
yeah.
Shockingly amazing.
Yeah.
How did you do it? I have no idea.
And I don't mean any disrespect about this, but it kind of makes the other ones that don't have
pale a little
in comparison because you're kind of going. If you can do this,
but then you have to give him a pass because it's like the brilliance doesn't come like that all the time everything.
Yeah, that's
if you're
true.
Doing
I do,
it by
you
yourself.
Do. I know, and it's a high bar and stuff like that. But hey, unfortunately, he set the bar.
He
you know,
did.
It's like, so, you
yes.
Know,
but
so,
he's only human, John.
He is, I know.
He's
and I'm sure I'm holding him to an unreasonable standard. It's just his standard, sorry. But it's just that it's so incredibly fun and entertaining to watch when they are like this.
Mm-hmm.
You just go...
Give me more.
Exactly. Yes. You do. That's why it keeps you coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
He set us up for the rest of the season. It's going to be just like this.
There you go.
From
last
here
thoughts
on out.
About this episode before we move into news and gossip. Anything?
No.
Are we good? I think we've talked exhaustingly about that. It was exhausting to watch. It was exhausting to talk now. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
We've actually discussed kind of all my news as we were going,
but
I have some,
okay.
You know, like predictions. I have fan
for
you.
Fan predictions, so this is more gossip.
So, Catherine Smith says, if the entire household don't die in a series of hideous car crashes as predicted by Courtney, maybe Edith and Bertie will be in need of a butler when they take over Brancaster Castle, and that will give Barrow, the evil butler, a new job. See? Bam! It's all worked out.
Courtney.
That's right.
Eric Tull says, I predict that everyone dies with the mummy's curse except for Barrow.
Oh.
The mummy's curse.
And he wrote some other stuff that's pretty, a little bit saucy, so I can't really say it here.
Yeah.
And commented on my comment about the pasty-faced English folks. And he says, to paraphrase the Dowager's remark to Martha, we always keep out of the sun. And he says, P.S., not by choice. Listen, I would just like to state for the record, my tan, even though I live in Southern California, all fake. Okay? Totally fake. So there. I am one of the pasty faces myself. Andrew Brumana. Okay, here we go. As I wrote on a Downton Facebook group, my tinfoil theory is that Bates and Anna have a child, Sam, who moves to the U.S. and marries a woman there. Sam and his wife buy a motel, after which Sam suddenly dies. Sam's wife raises their child on their own. The son grows up, helping run the motel. John Bates and Anna Grandson's name is Norman Bates. Okay, and then Solana Jones.
Nicely done, you tinfoil theory
funny.
Is wonderful.
That made me laugh. Solana Dill. Okay, so these are interesting. Outrageous prediction. Thomas started out jilted by a penniless duke. He will find love with Lord Hexham.
Oh, there you go.
Next, we have a not-so-outrageous prediction. Tom's chumminess with Neville Chamberlain will be his entree into a political career.
Oh, yeah. That's right? Good.
To begin with.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
remember?
Good. Like that.
Way back.
Because he's going to call his office. Neville's not going to forget
There's going to be a follow-up.
Yeah. Nice.
Of
I like that one. I like
I know,
that
good right? one. Not-so-outrageous prediction. Edith exposed Mary in season one, if you'll remember, with the Pamuk.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Mary now just about has what she needs to exact revenge, but at the last minute, she'll relent, although making sure Edith knows that she relented and is superior.
Ooh. That's very possible.
Very possible.
I like that.
Yeah. So that was very good. And a couple of emails. It was just great. It was an excellent episode. Lots of excellent predictions.
All plausible. almost. Except
almost
for the tinfoil. Although, you know, it's fun.
Yeah.
So
possible.
Yeah.
Super fun though. So that's what we have for that.
All right. So
do we have any other predictions?
I actually don't have any predictions. I want to defer anyway because I think the predictions we're getting from everybody
are far more interesting.
Hilarious.
Yes.
They're as entertaining as the show.
Yeah, they are. So. I commented on that on Twitter this week that you know you guys make my Mondays awesome.
Yeah. It's true because when I'm with Tamara on Mondays and I know that she's scrolling through these tweets and everything that she's cracking up and I'm going I can't wait to come here because I don't want to know, I generally don't tell you.
Get surprised.
I want to hear it as everybody. God, it's just amazing.
Well,
just amazing.
All right.
All right. We got to get out of here. Where can they find you, Courtney?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Stuart Starlet.
Tamara.
At Tamara Berg on Twitter. Also, my website is TamaraCentral.com. I just want to mention one thing. They're calling it Ulcergate.
Ulcergate.
Thank you,
Thank you very much. All right, you can find me here.
Explode like that, really?
Oh, sure.
Like out of your mouth and convulse? Oh, and yeah. All that, really? It
projectile convulsing.
I never
sure,
want
not?
To find out. Yes. I know enough. Ever that I know more than I need to know about that already.
Yeah. Well, fabulous episode. A pleasure to watch. Can't wait to see the next one.
Thanks for
thank you
out
so
with
much
us,
for
thank
writing in and for your thoughts and tweets, etc.
Three plus one left.
Oh, man.
Starting the tears now.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, once again, thanks for listening. We will talk to you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later,
biscuits!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.